Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports. Live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios here on the program. How bad? I feel like I might be projecting my own feelings onto everybody else. And I want to make sure that I don't do that. But this time last week, there was yelling, there was screaming, there was anger, there was a level of dissatisfaction with the head coach of the Tennessee Titans that I have not seen in the 6 years that he has been the coach after the Titans lost 27-3 to the Cleveland Browns. And I very much thought the coach was culpable for that lopsided of a performance. Then the Titans go out there and they beat Cincinnati 27-3. I'm not sure, by the way, I've ever seen that. You lose 27-3 one week and then you win 27-3 the next week. And again, this is a week-to-week league and you never want to be the team that has to face a team that just got blown out. And the Titans are now a perfect example of that. But I'm not sure that there was a sense of accomplishment or excitement or acceptance or whatever you want to call it about the victory over Cincinnati like there was the anger and the fear that your team might actually be terrible that we got from the Browns game. Does that make any sense, Ian?
I think maybe a little.
I sat there at the stadium and I felt like I was more mad about the Browns game than I was happy about the Bengals game. Now, some of that might be because the Bengals game followed the Browns game, so it was almost like the Titans had dug a hole for themselves and they just got back to the top as opposed to, you know, climbing up the ladder and, you know, being way above the hole or up the tree or whatever the, you know, analogy you want to make, whatever. But there was a lot of anger towards Mike Vrabel last week. There was a lot of talk about Mike Vrabel last week. I've always joked that when I was a kid, Philip Fulmer, after winning the national championship at Tennessee, was kind of a sacred cow. And so all of the yelling and screaming on Mondays after Tennessee would lose was usually centered around the offensive coordinator, Randy Sanders, or the defensive coordinator, John Chavis. And then when those phone calls started being about Fulmer, I started thinking, ooh, Fulmer might be in trouble. And not long after those phone calls started being about Fulmer, Fulmer was gone. Well, last week was kind of the first time that the phone calls, the anger, the blame, everything started to be pointed in the direction of Mike Vrabel. When things have not gone well over Vrabel's tenure, there has always been a scapegoat who is not Vrabel. There's Mariota. There's John Robinson. There's Tannehill in the Cincinnati game. There's Todd Downing. It's like everybody else got the blame. And every time the Titans won, Vrabel got all the credit. Then the Cleveland game happened. Can't blame Tannehill. And that's when people started getting mad about Vrabel. Because that was Vrabel's left tackle who was out there. And that was Vrabel's offensive coordinator that called those plays that singled up Myles Garrett. And that's Vrabel's defense that was allowing guys to run right by him for touchdowns. And so, at the same time, this week, I don't hear any anger about Mike Vrabel. I don't hear any talk about Vrabel's arrogance. I don't hear anybody upset about Vrabel's left tackle, Vrabel's inside backer, Vrabel's DBs, Vrabel's special teams. Nobody's mad at Vrabel this week, which again, it's a week-to-week league and you win, so everybody's happy. But I also don't hear a lot of pumping the tires of Mike Vrabel either, if you know what I mean. In years past, anytime the Titans won anything, there was almost this relief of, Vrabel. I remember when the Titans won their first game with Vrabel as the coach. It was the second game of the 2018 season. The Titans had gone to Miami. and they had played an eight-hour game, and Delanie Walker had broken his ankle, and they were without both tackles, and Mariota was out, and Blaine Gabbert was playing quarterback, and the Houston Texans, with Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus, came into Nashville. And the Titans were calling up dudes off the practice squad to play tackle against J.J. Watt. And it was like, they have no chance to win this game. And the Titans paper-clipped and gummed their way to a victory. They had Kevin Byard throw a touchdown pass on special teams. They had a Jadeveon Clowney, who wasn't even active for the game, a Jadeveon Clowney 15-yard penalty, gave the Titans just the right amount of yardage in order to kick a game-winning field goal, and I think they won that game 17-14. And I remember when they won the game and the game was over, and Mike Keith started talking about how the Titans took on the identity of their coach. And from that moment on, every time the Titans won a game, it was always about the coach. It was always, wow, look at Vrabel's game plan to shut down Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. Wow, look at Vrabel using 91 players in order to capture the number one seed in the AFC. And even when they lost, like to the Ravens in the playoffs, and Vrabel punted from his own 40 or whatever it was, there wasn't a lot of anger towards Vrabel or blame or nothing. Vrabel's defense was terrible in 2020, and all anybody was really trying to do was figure out who was in charge. Like, that's all it was. Who's the coordinator of the defense? Who's in charge of the defense? We didn't even know. Should we be mad at Shane Bowen? Should we be mad at this guy? Should we be mad at that guy? Who should we be mad at? But we all knew that we weren't going to be mad at Vrabel. And last Sunday, after the Browns game, there was a different feeling. Vrabel didn't get blamed for the end of the year last year with all those losses. Downing did. Robinson did. But not Vrabel. Vrabel didn't get blamed for the Saints' loss. Tim Kelly and Tannehill did. But now that they won a game, I am just a little surprised, almost taken aback by the fact that I don't necessarily really hear anybody saying, wow, Vrabel. And maybe some of that is because the shine has come off the apple a little bit and people want to see if this is more than just one get-right game. Maybe some of it is because Derrick Henry played like vintage Derrick Henry. And maybe some of it is because, again, even though we want our team to be good, there's also kind of a recognition that we have that that's not the Cincinnati Bengal team that has been giving you problems for the last 2 years. That is a Cincinnati Bengal team with Joe Burrow on one leg. And so, yeah, you beat them. And yeah, Tim Kelly called a great game. And yeah, Tannehill threw the ball well. And yeah, Henry ran the ball well. But it wasn't like you were really going shot for shot with Joe Burrow. Because that's not, Joe Burrow's hurt. And you all know that. Which I'm a little surprised by. And I'm not insulting your intelligence with what I'm about to say, but most of the time, I think 85% of Titans fans get it and they understand. And, you know, they look, you saw the game Sunday. Joe Burrow wasn't right. And then I think there's like the other, you know, 15% that's like, Jared, how dare you take away from our accomplishments and what we did this week? We won that game fair and square. We don't need. And I haven't really heard a lot of that. Like, I haven't heard a lot of, hey, the defense was great. It doesn't matter if that was Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Tom Brady. That doesn't matter. I haven't really heard any of that. So maybe that's why, again, Vrabel's not getting credit for the win. But I find it fascinating that after 5 years of every time you win, Vrabel gets all the credit. Every time you lose, Vrabel gets none of the blame. That in the last 2 weeks, we've had team gets blown out 27-3, Vrabel's the bad guy, team wins 27-3, nobody's talking about Vrabel. I am a little surprised by that. And I can't really put my finger on why that is. I can't tell you that it's, you know, that you guys have waned on Vrabel, because I don't know. I mean, I still think Vrabel's a good coach, but, you know, I have been very disappointed with some of the decisions that I have seen lately and some of the incompetence. And I think some of it, too, is the Titans so far this season have been one step backwards, one step forward. Lose a game by 1 point to the Saints at the very end of the game, turn around and win a game by 3 points in overtime. Get blown out, turn around and do the blowing out. It's like, great. So now you're at even footing, and let's see how you do this week. I don't know. Against the Colts, I don't know. If people are down on Vrabel and that's why he's not getting the credit, I don't know if people are giving Vrabel the credit, and I'm just the one who hasn't really thought, like, hey, let's talk a lot about Vrabel. I don't know. But I am surprised by the fact that the story all last week was about Mike Vrabel. And the story after the Titans dominate the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that Mike Vrabel has never beaten, is not about Mike Vrabel. 615-737-1025. Throw that to the list if you want to get in there. 615-737-1025 here on our program. So I did say that I was going to watch the AFC South teams because, right now everybody's 2-2, and the Texans rookie quarterback just threw for 300 yards, and Anthony Richardson is playing well for the Colts, and the Titans are getting ready to play the Colts, and everybody's sitting there tied at the division. So I did. And I have my evaluation of the AFC South so far, and I was surprised after watching all those games this morning. I was surprised by who I think the best team is. That's not the Titans. And I'm not even sure I would say the Titans are the best team. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. It's Stillman and Company. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
One quarter in, how do you feel about where you're
going? Which way you slice that 17th game, Corey? Who gets that piece of the pie? That's a little sweetener?
Yeah.
You know, we just got to just be more consistent. You know, we need to get on the road and be able to go win on the road in the division. And it's going to be a huge test. You know, so that's where our focus is. And, you know, trying to execute the keys each week and, you know, take care of the difference and taking care of the football and, you know, being able to get off the field on third down, all these things affect the quarterback.
Vrabel's like, yeah, you know, we got to do all these things to win the game, you know. Whatever the normal spiel is, yeah, just go ahead and put that one on replay for what we got to do all these weeks and so on and so forth. But right now, four games into the year, everybody's 2-2. Now, everybody else has played division games. Jacksonville has beaten Indianapolis. Houston has beaten Jacksonville. Indianapolis has beaten Houston. And Jacksonville's beaten Indianapolis. So everybody's beaten each other except for you, because you haven't played a divisional game. But again, for the most part, everybody's 2-2. So I did watch a handful of games this morning after watching the Titans film. I did watch a handful of games this morning of the AFC South teams because I wanted to get a sense for what's actually happening. Like, C.J. Stroud threw for 300 yards on Sunday against the Steelers. But I was more impressed with the Texans' defense than I was with C.J. Stroud. You know, they're throwing a bunch of screen passes and getting big yards after the catch and so on and so forth. So I'm going to go through each team and give you the evaluation of what I see in the games that I've watched. And I am a little surprised to admit that I think the best team right now in the AFC South, and I can't really compare the Titans to the other three teams because I just have such a stronger knowledge of the Titans. Like, I've seen every play of every game like 8 times, whereas with these, you know, I watched it once. Right now, I think the Texans are the best team in the division. And I'm going to tell you why. The Texans, we'll start with them. The Texans are much better coached than they have been in the past. No disrespect to David Culley, who I think is a good coach. But like last year, Lovie Smith, you know, The Texans are well coached. And Bobby Slowick is their offensive coordinator. And everybody told me that Bobby Slowick was Kyle Shanahan's right-hand man. Now, I don't know what it is about Belichick that people that leave Belichick in New England go get their own jobs and don't know the difference between third down and fourth down. They don't know the difference between a punt and a kick. I don't know how that's possible. But it does feel like a lot of these guys leave Shanahan and they've got a pretty good feel for what it is that Shanahan does. Whether it's McVay, McDaniel, you name it, those guys that have left San Francisco as the offensive coaches seem to have a pretty good feel. And Bobby Slowick is no different. When I watch the Texans, I see Bobby Slowick finding ways to get the ball into the hands of their playmakers, most notably Nico Collins at wide receiver. Stroud looks like a rookie quarterback from the standpoint that he really only looks at that one read and, you know, they try to draw it up for him to get somebody open. And if it's not there, he's going to take off and run. But he is accurate. He is confident. And again, Nico Collins, that wide receiver they have, he is a playmaker now. Damian Pierce had a good game on Sunday against the Steelers, both running the ball and catching a screen pass. And so those are kind of the two big weapons that Stroud has. But the yards that he's putting up, they're like San Francisco yards. It's like, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo throws it short to Debo Samuel, and Debo Samuel trucks three guys and goes 35 yards for a touchdown. That's what C.J. Stroud's doing. And so I see a lot of San Francisco when I look at the Texans. Their defense, it's a lot of the same names. Guys like Jalen Petrie and Jerry Hughes and things like that, but their defense is tough. Now, some of that just might be the Steelers themselves, and their defense was getting run over by Anthony Richardson in the Colts game, but I just feel like the Texans are much better coached with D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick. And so right now, I would say the Texans are the best team in the South. Indy is a weird team. Their defense stinks. Their receivers stink. Their tight ends stink. Their offensive line stinks. But they've got Anthony Richardson, who shows his Superman-like abilities on a very consistent basis. Now, he himself is not consistent because one throw to the next is not the same for him. But it's like every game that I watch of Richardson, he showed the Superman ability, including last week against the Rams. Now, I don't buy the Colts over the long haul because I think that teams are going to scheme defensively for Richardson. And when they scheme defensively, starting with you on Sunday, when they scheme for Richardson, what's going to have to happen is there's going to have to be like another guy that can kind of take over the game as a receiver, a running back, something like that. And I just don't think the Colts have those guys. And I don't think Jonathan Taylor is going to be physically in a spot where he can dominate the way that Jonathan Taylor is capable of dominating. But if he had an A.J. Brown, and I do think Shane Steichen is running, you know, a good offense there, and it is very much the Jalen Hurts offense, but he can't throw outside the numbers to A.J. Brown the way Jalen Hurts can. If he had an A.J. Brown, I would be scared of the Colts right now. If I were in Indianapolis, I would be trying to figure out what is it going to take for me to get whoever the disgruntled receiver of the year is, what would it take to get him? If it's Devontae, if it's Justin Jefferson, whoever it may be, there's probably going to be a receiver, a high-end receiver that ends up on the move. What do I have to do to get that guy? Or will I be able to draft that guy this year? Because if you put Garrett Wilson on the Indianapolis Colts and Richardson had that guy, he can already throw it. I mean, and it's a flick of the wrist. There was one TD said I had to watch a throw to Alec Pierce. He's on the run, and he fires a ball on the sidelines, and Pierce is getting interfered with, and it hits him right in between the one and the four. And Pierce ends up catching the ball. He had one in the end zone that he threw for Michael Pittman that Dan Orlovsky today was like, he should have caught it for a touchdown. that I'm like, how do you dudes miss some of these throws? But their defense is horrible. Their receivers are not good. Their tight ends, they still have Mo Alley Cox, but he's still Mo Alley Cox. And I think their offensive line sucks. And I think their win against Baltimore was a fluke. And then there's Jacksonville. And yes, Jacksonville beat the stuffing out of Atlanta and London on Sunday, but I think they stink. Like, I think the Colts are a below-average team that's got a young quarterback, that's got a promising future, because there's so many different quarterbacks I see when I look at Anthony Richardson. I see some Josh Allen. I see some Cam Newton. I see some Jalen Hurts. I see some, believe it or not, Mariota. I see some Derrick Henry in Anthony Richardson's game. But with Jacksonville, like, I just don't think they're very good. Jacksonville won on Sunday with 300 yards of total offense. That is not sustainable. They won the game because Desmond Ridder turned the ball over three times, and he tried to turn it over four or five times. And right now, Trevor Lawrence, and I don't hear anybody out there that thought he was going to be league MVP, or he was the next Joe Burrow, or he's going to ascend this year, or he's throwing the ball as well as any quarterback in the league. I don't hear anybody coming out and saying, wow, I was wrong about that, because Trevor Lawrence is a game manager right now. He's going to throw the ball for about 220 yards, and he's going to throw the ball to two people, Christian Kirk and Evan Engram. Every now and then he'll throw the ball to Ridley, but those are the two guys he wants to go to, Kirk and Engram, and he's averaging about 235 yards a game. And how about this, yards per attempt, which is a very big, you know, Vegas stat and a stat people. He's got less yards per attempt. Talking about Trevor Lawrence, he's got less yards per attempt than Ryan Tannehill. Think about how crazy that is. Less yards per attempt than Tannehill. I think Jacksonville's bad. I mean, I think now again, everybody's 2-2. And if the only game you watched of the Titans was the Browns, you'd think they're bad too. But right now, if I had to rank them so far through the four games, just what I've seen, and I haven't watched every game, but I've watched enough of them now of the rest of the AFC South. Texans 1, Colts 2, Jags 3. And I can't put you in there because I know too much about you. I do think this. I think the Titans are going to be able to run the ball in the Colts on Sunday. And I think the Titans are going to be able to throw the ball in the Colts on Sunday. And I know I, you know, didn't give the defense any credit with winning in the dominant fashion with which they did against Cincinnati, where they allow a field goal and then they allow nothing else the rest of the game after the first drive because of Joe Burrow's injury. But I do expect the defense, at least right now, while he's a rookie with no receivers and a bad offensive line, I do expect the defense to dominate Anthony Richardson on Sunday. Like, or dominate might be light, but contain the Superman-like talent that Anthony Richardson has. 615-737-1025. If you want to weigh in, 615-737-1025 here on the program. And so there is one thing about the Titans wide receivers that I feel like just needs to be said. And so I'm going to say it. Before they start game planning for the Colts, which will be tomorrow, we'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 615-737-1025, 1025, 1063, the game.
Big to Henry again. Under pressure. Good hands catch that time for a touchdown. It's Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
All right, there he is right here. Now watch him come across. This is a called a slide right here. So he's going to come across the formation. You see him sliding through there, catches the ball underneath, and that's all about the quarterback flipping his head around, making sure he finds that slider, delivering the ball off that play action.
Second touchdown of the season for Westbrook-Ikhine. Bigger role for him with Treylon Burks out.
In what ways did the receivers step up with Treylon out?
Well, Nick is, and Chris, is they have made plays throughout the early part of the season when called upon. Those guys work extremely hard. They play on special teams for us. They know all the receiver spots. invaluable, versatile players. So I was happy to see them have success, and they both came up with big plays today.
There you go. That was Vrabel after the Nick Westbrook Akine touchdown. And Chris Moore had some big catches. And I don't know what the injury report's going to be tomorrow for practice. I don't know what the game plan is going to be this week against Indianapolis. But I've just got to get something off my chest. Somebody texted into the text line earlier today, and they said, did you hear what D. Mace said about how Treylon Burks should be giving up his playing time to Chris Moore and Nick Westbrook Akine, or that the Titans should be giving Treylon Burks snaps to those two guys going forward because they produce? Now, I didn't hear what Derek said, but I agree with that sentiment right now. Right now, I kind of like where the Titans are at wide receiver. DeAndre is the main guy, and it's a work in progress with him and Tannehill, but you saw the one they hit on the sideline this week, and I do think that the more that they're out there together, the more that they keep throwing to each other, the more they keep believing in each other, that ultimately that'll pay off and DeAndre will continue to be DeAndre Hopkins. So I'm happy with what I'm getting out of DeAndre Hopkins right now. Nick Westbrook Akine is the high volume guy that Ryan Tannehill trusts. You know, we talk about Kyle Phillips, and we'll get to him more in a second, but wanting that slot guy that the quarterback can just wear out throwing the ball to, just wear it out, wear it out, wear it out, wear it out. I think that that's what Nick Westbrook Akine can be for this team. And I watched the Rams on Sunday against the Colts, and they've got this Puka Nacua, who they drafted in the fifth round out of BYU, and he's their new Cooper Kupp. Like, Stafford throws the ball to the other guys, Van Jefferson and Tutu Atwell and these other guys, but he, on every big throw, is going to Puka Nacua every time. And it's like, you can see watching the game how Matthew Stafford just trusts Nacua will get open every time. And that's what Westbrook Akine is doing for Tannehill. So if Tannehill trusts Nick Westbrook Akine, why would you take him off the field to put somebody else out there that no matter what Tannehill says, it's obvious he doesn't have the trust in that guy that he has in NWI because Tannehill has the most trust in Nick Westbrook Akine. And then Chris Moore's been their deep ball guy. He's kind of got the Chris Sanders thing going on. You know, in 2000, Derek Mason was the number one receiver. Chris Sanders caught six passes over 35 yards. It kept defenses honest from loading the box against Eddie George. And that's what Chris Moore's become. And I kind of like the three of those guys together. And the other thing is, and they were not perfect at this because, you know, Moore missed a block that led to a tackle and Westbrook Akine had a false start the other night. But we know the Titans are going to win based upon running the football. You know, it was the run that got established, and then the passing game took off on Sunday against the Bengals. Well, NWI and Moore are better run blockers than any of the other receivers that you have. So if Nick Westbrook Akine is catching a bunch of passes and Chris Moore is a deep ball threat, and he's a better run blocker in the run game than Treylon Burks is, then you can keep defenses off balance because Derrick Henry's in the game and they're worried he's going to get the ball, but you also have to be worried about Chris Moore running down the field on a deep ball. And I don't mean to be mean when it comes to Burks and Phillips, but those guys have been given every opportunity for the last 2 years. And you can't make the club in the tub. And so if those guys keep getting hurt, and then when they play, I can't trust Burks to catch the ball. I can't trust Phillips to catch a punt. And why would I invest in these guys right now? Why would I take passes away from productive receivers like Westbrook Akine and Moore to give them to Burks, who I'm not even sure can catch the ball right now? Now, going into the season, we didn't think the Titans had any wide receivers. So we just kind of shrugged it off like, well, you're going to give the ball to Burks because who else do you have to give the ball to? But right now, I'd rather give the ball to those three guys than give the ball to Burks, who might not catch it, or give the ball to Phillips, who hasn't played in the game in like a year and a half. But the Titans just keep giving those guys opportunities. And, you know, Vrabel always talks about how it doesn't matter where you were drafted, or it doesn't matter, you know, how much talent you have, or, you know, things like that. And that all that matters is that you earn what you get. But I do think that the Titans, with those two in particular, they just keep giving them opportunities. And so if Derek said that he thinks the game plan this week against Indianapolis should be more focused on Westbrook, Akine, and Moore than it should be on Burks, I agree. And I hate it because Burks has more talent than both of those guys. I mean, Burks has a lot more talent than both of those guys. And everybody that knows Treylon Burks, and I'm not one of these people, but everybody that knows Treylon Burks, they say he is just the most upstanding guy. But if I can't get the production out of you that I can get out of these guys that I'm paying $1 million to, I can't wait forever. And what I would hope that it would do, though I don't expect that this is what would happen, what I would hope would happen is that when Burks gets the game plan tomorrow morning and sees that there's not a lot in there for him and that there's a lot more in there for Westbrook, Akine, and for Chris Moore, that that would then motivate him to get his spot back in the lineup. And then if he can outplay those guys, then put him in there. But I don't want to take the guys that are performing well out just so I can put in a guy that I drafted highly that I keep waiting to come around. So I like the wide receivers the way they are right now. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Keith from Bowling Green says, Jacksonville has a good defense. I'm not convinced of that. I am not convinced that Jacksonville has a good defense. They do have good players. I think a lot of their good defensive players are probably more underrated, like Aluokwan and Andre Sisco, the safety, Tyson Campbell, the corner. I mean, everybody knows about their first-round picks, and Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker. But I do like, you know, some of those guys on defense, but I'm not convinced. Like what you saw out of Cleveland, I'm not convinced that's what Jacksonville is. And that's not a good enough defense for me to think that you can stop them. One texter into the text line says, the reason why people aren't hyping up the Titans after their big win over Cincinnati is because it's the Titans special, lose to average teams and beat the playoff teams. I don't know about Cincinnati or the Chargers making the playoffs. I certainly don't know about Cincinnati making the playoffs. Now, apparently Cincinnati starts off slow every year, and then Joe gets them cooking after about week 6 or 7, and considering that Joe's hurt, you know, maybe it'll be week 6, 7, 8 that Joe gets back to being Joe, and then they'll be cooking. But right now, I don't think that the two teams you beat, I don't think they're playoff teams. Texter says, Kyle Phillips looked great last year versus New York when he was healthy. Why the Kyle Phillips slander? I mean, he never plays. And that New York game was over a year ago. That was like a year and a month ago. So if I'm going to get one good game out of you every 13 months, I don't need you on my team. I mean, since then, and again, I'm not the biggest Nick Westbrook Akine fan. That guy does the morning show for us, who's the biggest Nick Westbrook Akine fan. But
although Joe's bold prediction earlier this year before the season start that Nick Westbrook Akine wouldn't even make the roster.
Yeah, what a stooge take by Joe, especially considering that's his boy. But Nick Westbrook Akine had big games last year against the Broncos and against the Commanders, and I'm not saying that Nick Westbrook Akine is Randy Moss, but it's like, well, Kyle Phillips had a good game, Jared. Yeah, one. And NWI's had some good games. The problem is the NWI doesn't have a good game every week. You know, A.J. Brown has a good game every week, and that's what you want. But right now, you only have what you have. And I just don't want to sit here and wait on Burks and wait on Phillips for forever when I've got guys that right now kind of fit what Tannehill's trying to do, and it seems like they do a pretty decent job at it. One texter into the text line says, what do you think about Josh Whyle in the passing game? I like Josh Whyle. I thought he had a good game. When I watched the tape, you know, and you see the behind, you know, the behind angle. And, I mean, Whyle delivered some thump out there. I mean, that kind of gave me a little bit of hope that they're going to use him more and that he's going to be a better blocker and maybe gives them something, you know, that they haven't had in a while. 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in. 615-737-1025 here on Stillman & Company. Apparently, I've angered the morning show. We will discuss that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
As you're talking, I'm looking at the text line to see if anybody's chimed in. But I just looked at like the one of the most recent ones from 5:54 yesterday.
Yeah.
I know Vrabel's a lot to blame, but I'm still not sure he should be fired. What was Jared talking about yesterday?
I don't know.
We're firing Vrabel now? Are we
Maybe
firing
so.
Vrabel?
He did text me from my scale the other day of like, where am I at on the firing Vrabel scale?
Okay. The scale. So in other words, he asked for your number 1 to 10?
Correct.
Okay. And what was your number?
I think it was like 2.3.
Right now, there's nothing. It's a 1-2 team, and you have a very good coach.
I still think he is a very, very, very good coach in the National Football League, and it kind of boggles my mind.
One person can really hold him accountable. It's Amy Adams Strunk. So if you think that's the answer, I think you're crazy.
I love Mike Vrabel, and I think he's good. And I understand bemoaning the struggle right now, and I'm surprised, frankly, by the degree of the struggle.
I've long believed that Vrabel is a really, really good coach. I still believe that Vrabel is a really, really good coach. And I don't think that there is any sort of hot seat talk right now with him that is valid.
I think there's no scenario this year that would not have him in this job next year if he wants to be in the job.
I think Mike Vrabel, in the big picture overall, remains an excellent coach.
Who's coddling Vrabel? This is my question. I mean, again, like when you say hold him accountable, does this mean Vrabel, get out here? You go to your room.
There you go. That was the mashup last week of all the times that I felt like the morning show said, you know, Vrabel's a great coach. And Joe demanded Friday morning that I get the tape. So I got the tape and we played the tape on Friday. And apparently the Rex rant this morning at 7:45, Joe was all worked up saying that, basically accusing me of lying. Joe, because, you know, we took the cuts and then we had the, you know, the little transition sound effect. Joe basically made it sound like we took them out of context that, you know, they were saying, you know, Vrabel's a great coach, but, and we cut the butt out. So during the break, I listened back to that cut right there that we just played of all the different takes. And I think there were 7 takes in there. And of the 7 takes, only 2 of them, and I think they were both Robbie, were not, you know, ended with a period that was ending a complete thought. So Ian, can we get that cut again? Again, what Joe is accusing me of doing is of taking out context and of basically, you know, lying about what they said. Let's play the cut again. And leave my mic open, please, Ian, when you do this.
As you're talking, I'm looking at the text line to see if anybody's chimed in. But I just looked at like the one of the most recent ones from 5:54 yesterday.
Yeah.
I know Vrabel's a lot to blame, but I'm still not sure he should be fired. What was Jared talking about yesterday?
I don't know.
We're firing Vrabel now? Are we
Maybe
firing
so.
Vrabel?
He did text me from my scale the other day of like, where am I at on the firing Vrabel scale?
Okay. The scale. So in other words, he asked for your number 1 to 10?
Correct.
Okay. And what was your number?
I think it was like 2.3.
Right now, there's
complete
nothing.
Thought.
It's a 1-2 team, and you have a very good coach.
I
Period.
Still think
complete
he
thought.
Is a very, very, very good coach in the National Football League, and it kind of boggles my mind.
One person can really hold him accountable. It's Amy Adams Strunk. So if you think that's the answer, I think you're crazy.
Complete thought.
I love Mike Vrabel, and I think he's good. And I understand bemoaning the struggle right now, and I'm surprised, frankly, by the degree of the struggle.
I've long believed that Vrabel is a really, really good coach. I still believe that Vrabel is a really, really good coach, and I don't think that there is any sort of hot seat talk right now with him that is valid.
I think there's no scenario this year that would not have him in this job next year if he wants to be in the job.
I think Mike Vrabel, in the big picture overall, remains an excellent coach.
Who's coddling Vrabel? This is my question. I mean, again, like when you say hold him accountable, does this mean Vrabel, get out here? You go to your room.
Okay. I think that most of those were complete thoughts. As in, there was a period at the end of what they said. There was one Robbie cut in there that definitely was not a complete thought and was just a before the period got in there. Everything else I thought was a complete thought from Joe, Robbie, or Paul. Ian, your thoughts?
Well, there are a couple of sentences and thoughts there that I'd like to hear continued as a, you know, perhaps, you know, a little bit of an amendment to what they had talked about earlier on.
Well, we're not just going to replay whole segments of the Robbie and Rex Road program. I mean, we're not going to just sit here and say, okay, here's a 6-minute cut of sound. We're not going to do that. Nobody does that. You know, somebody asked me one time why I'd rather just take cuts that people say on the air as opposed to, like, have them on as a guest. This was when, you know, Willie was defending the Predators' plan with David Poyle and was yelling at the callers, which, by the way, was some very juicy and enticing radio. And I would just, you know, play the cut and then disagree with it. And somebody asked me, they were like, well, why don't you have Willie on to discuss it? I said, because I don't need 10 minutes for that 38-second cut that is the gist of what I want to discuss. So, I mean, unless I just run the whole Robbie and Rex Road program, there's no way for me to, without cutting. Again, you hear periods at the end of those cuts. So I don't think it's dishonest. Now, did I definitely put the sound music in there and everything else to make it a little more dramatic on Joe and Paul and Robbie after they said, we didn't say those things? Yes. Yes, I did. Yes, I did that a little bit, yes. But to act like it's disingenuous or dishonest or, you know, like I was taking them out of context or, I mean, I think you got the gist of what they think from those cuts. In fact, I don't think there's anything in those cuts that they would say that they take back. Or I would ask this question. What in there was out of context? What did I put in that little mashup that you don't believe or that you disagree with or that you felt like was not fairly articulated? That would be my only question there. That's it for us. We're out of here today. What a great show. And I did not know until somebody tweeted me with the podcast that Joe's rant was about me this morning. But, man, I love that. That's it for us. We're out of here. Riddle and the Reporter, they're coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow, too.